असतो मा सद्गमय, तमसो मा ज्योतिर्गमय, मृत्युर्मा अमृतं गमय। ॐ शांति शांति शांति। ॐ लीड अस फ्रॉम द अनरियल टू द रियल, लीड अस फ्रॉम डार्कनेस अनटू लाइट, लीड अस फ्रॉम डेथ टू इमॉर्टैलिटी। ॐ पीस पीस पीस। प्रणाम्स टू रिवियर्ड स्वामी नित्यस्थान जी महाराज। Greetings to all the revered monks, brahmacharis who have come here, esteemed members of the faculty and administration of IIM Bangalore. Professor Shastri is there. And students, hopefully some students are there. I know how it goes. I've seen in IITs, IIMs also, if you leave it free and open, PGP students would rather not come. The executive MBA students might come, but the regular kids, they are overburdened with assignments and deadlines. But you know, what I'm going to say would actually be pretty useful in facing the pressures that they are facing right now. As Professor Shastri mentioned, I was trying to keep it hidden, but I sort of belong to your tribe. Before becoming a monk, I was on a campus very much like this. Not this one, but a similar campus, and I was also, I did my MBA. Which is why I think Advaita in daily life, that daily life part of it, how it's a very MBA attitude. And philosophy is fine, but how can we get something which will be useful for us right away, right now? As was just mentioned, I have been on my feet for quite some time. Now, because I've been traveling, I took the longest flight that I've ever taken in my life, nearly 18 hours nonstop from New York to Singapore. And then from Singapore, I came here yesterday. So I'm a little hazy on what the time is, what is the date. And so what I'm going to say now also, you should take it with a pinch of salt. And then however, the advantage is that I get to speak on my favorite subject and to an audience which is very interested in this subject. So I'm going to enjoy myself, and I suggest that you all do the same. I'll speak for about 40 to 45 minutes, and then the subject is not unknown to many people here. We have been following Vedanta Advaita closely, studying it, practicing it. And then we will have question answer. That's the most interesting part of it. So if you've got questions, keep it in your mind. You'll get to ask your questions. And also convey my namaskars to, I understand there's another hall where this is being screened. People we could not unfortunately accommodate in this hall. Some people are sitting there. So namaskars to them also. All right. Advaita Vedanta and Advaita in daily life. What are we talking about here? Advaita, we know, is the philosophy, is the highest spiritual teaching of the Vedas, which are found in the Upanishads. So the very definition of Vedanta is Vedanta Nama Upanishad Pramanam. The source of spiritual knowledge called the Upanishads is Vedanta. And then Vedanta comes in many flavors, if you will. It's been taught, interpreted, systematized by great acharyas into these wonderful, grand edifices of schools of thought, the non-dual school Advaita Vedanta, which is the primary interpretation which I will use today. But also, we must acknowledge, because we are here in this land, this is the land where the main streams of Vedanta, they have confluence here, you know, like Triveni, Advaita, Vishishta Advaita, Dvaita Vedanta, all in this most holy land. One way of, when we talk about the goal in spiritual life, sometimes you talk about it as if it is somewhere distant from us. What I mean by this is, sometimes when you're driving along in the United States, you see this, some church has put up a big billboard, you know, it says, heaven is a place. That's all it says. Heaven is a place. And then below it will be written, call 1-800 for some. So they will give you some knowledge about heaven. But notice, when it says heaven is a place. So heaven is some place, not this place. It is some location. It is separated from us by distance. So the goal, some distance of somewhere else, not here. That's one way of putting it. And that's there in many of the theistic religions of the world. Advaita Vedanta, so I'm doing what marketing people might recognize, you know, first a hard sell of Advaita, advertisement. So it creates interest in that. And I'm not alone in this. You'll see Sri Krishna, once in a while, when he starts a chapter, he'll start with, I'm going to tell you the king of all secrets, the king of all, the Rajavidya, Rajaguhya, strong advertisement, so that Arjuna stays awake, you know, takes notes and is serious about it. So one of the advantages of Advaita Vedanta, as I see it, is that what Advaita is talking about is not distance from us in space. It's not that there is Brahman, Atman, Moksha somewhere there, not here. No, Advaita says what we are seeking in Advaita is here. It's there also. It's everywhere, but also here. The goal that we are seeking in Advaita is not separated from us in time. So another billboard, these are actual billboards I saw. It says that after death, very ominous statement, after death, you will see God. So it's as if a little scary also. And again, below that, call 1-800-9. But notice, I immediately noticed the language. After death, after. It's a time word, before, after. So that means not now. God is not now, heaven is not now. Spiritual realization at least is not now. It's then, later, after death, after the next avatar comes, after I get samadhi, after I get some vision of God, after that, then only I'm enlightened, then only I've reached heaven, then only I've got God, something, after something. But Advaita Vedanta says, it's after that also, but it's now, and it's all the time. The goal that what we are going to talk about in Advaita Vedanta and what I will talk about today is there, everywhere, and here. Is before and after, but most importantly, it's now. It's here and now. And also, when we talk about spirituality in many traditions, we talk about it as if it's something other, God or something, which is something different from me. I, me, right now, other than me, there is something which I have to realize. In Advaita Vedanta, another advantage is what we are talking about is not an other. It's you. It's you. It's you here and now. So what we are going to talk about in the next few minutes is you here and now, right now, as you are, as we are, right here, right now. What I did just now, those who have been studying Advaita Vedanta, you know it. Technically, it is called Desha Kala Vastu. There is no separation in Desha, space, what we are going to seek. There's no separation in Kala, time, what we are going to seek. And there's no separation in object, Vastu. That's not one object to another object, and not one entity to another entity. It's you. So if it is, there's no separation in time, space, and object, Desha Kala Vastu, then what kind of a journey is this spiritual journey in Advaita Vedanta? One can put the journey in physical terms also, in space terms. It's a journey from our worldly life to heavenly life. You can go from here to Vaikuntha. That is one kind of journey. Or it's a journey, you live this life, and after that, if you're a devout, believing person, a moral person, after this life, you attain to some spiritual state, post-mortem spirituality. So that is also possible. Or you attain to some divine entity, God. So spiritual journey can be from one space to another, one place to another. It can be from one time to another. It can be from one entity to another entity, or one object to another object, one thing to another. But in Advaita Vedanta, we are denying all of that. We are not saying it's not about going anywhere. It's not about waiting for something to happen. It's not even about something else other than you. If it's not a journey in space, if it's not a journey in time,
if it's not a journey in object,
vastu, then what kind of spiritual journey is Advaita Vedanta?
It's a journey from ignorance to knowledge. From not knowing, not realizing, not getting it, not waking up to it, to knowing it, realizing it, getting it, to waking up to it. Now, here's the interesting thing, that if I say God is in heaven, I am safe right now. Or God is after death, you will see God, then I am safe right now. Because if you ask me, why don't this God you're talking about, why can't I see God now? Well, because God is, you will see only after death. You're not dead yet, so you're not seeing. And after death, you can't come and catch me also. If you don't see God, you said after death, you will see, where is God, Swamiji? Swamiji not around anymore. But the teacher of Advaita has a problem, has a big challenge. The moment I say, make grand claims like, right here, right now, you are that reality we're going to talk about, Atman, Brahman, then the immediate challenge will be, I don't feel that. That I am Atman, Brahman, right here, right now. Right now I am Aham Brahmasmi. If you're saying that, I don't feel it. Show me. If it is right here, if it is right now, how can we realize it? How can you demonstrate it to me? In Vakyavritti, one of the introductory texts written by Adi Shankaracharya, the student is asking the teacher, so you have shown me that I am not the body, I am not the mind. All right. He says, Karamalakavat, like a fruit, like a berry on the palm of my hand. Show me what I am right now. Because body and mind, what I thought I was, this is at least perceptible to me. I know, I am very clear, I am this. Now you are demonstrating or trying to show that I am actually not the body mind. Then, what am I? As clearly as I see myself as the body mind, in that, at that level of clarity, please show this Atman to me, what I am. That is the challenge that the teacher of Advaita faces. And I am firmly convinced that this is something that Advaita can answer to the satisfaction of any rational mind. This is the beauty of Advaita Vedanta, the power of Advaita. I talk to neuroscientists, philosophers in the West here also, people who are not particularly religious or spiritual. And one beauty of Advaita Vedanta is when I talk about Advaita to such people, if they get it, and some of them do get what I'm trying to say, they may not be convinced, they may not become Advaitins, they may not become believers or followers in this, but one thing I've always noticed, that there is no way of refuting these arguments or these pointers which Advaita uses. I remember I was sitting next to this lady who was a neuroscientist and was traveling somewhere in Europe. I think I was flying from Lisbon to Frankfurt or something like that, the transit flight. She was sitting next to me. She started asking. Later on, I realized, and she was striking up the conversation. She said she's afraid of flying. So whoever she sits next to, she starts talking to divert herself. So tell me about your spiritual beliefs. And I talked about Advaita Vedanta. After that, she said, you know, I am not convinced by what you said, but I cannot find a fault in your arguments. But that's a great thing. That's a very powerful thing. Becoming convinced and following this, it takes some time. But if one is not willing, but one is very sharp, one is able to understand what is being said, one will see that there is a great merit to these arguments. Sam Harris, who is, I don't know, some of you may have heard of Sam Harris. He was one of the militant atheists. And yet, in his book, Waking Up, Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens, Sam Harris was considered in that league, or is considered in that league. But unlike the others, unlike Richard Dawkinson, Sam Harris is interested in spirituality. He does not admit religion as such, but he's very curious and he's an inquirer. So in his book, he says, completely against all religion, but I must admit that there are these two traditions, Advaita Vedanta of Hinduism and Dzogchen Buddhism and Tibetan Buddhism. In these two traditions, there is a core of truth which I cannot deny. Anybody with some rational mind and inquiry cannot deny that there is a core of truth there which cannot be refuted. So what is this core of truth? Entirely on the basis of reason, entirely on the basis of experience, and that too available experience. I will not say that, all right, so I'm going to teach you this particular samadhi. Please practice these meditations. 30 years later, come back and tell me, did you realize or not? And that's a cop-out. We'll talk about Advaita on the basis of our experience right here, right now. What is this undeniable core of truth? How can we discover it? And what can it do for us right away, starting here in our daily lives, how it can be effective for us? I was just thinking where to start, because all roads lead to Brahman, not Rome, all roads lead to Brahman. And there are many such roads in Advaita Vedanta. And all the texts, they all take you in different ways to the same teaching. The teaching itself is well known to all of us. Tattvamasi, you are that reality. You are infinite existence, consciousness, bliss. You are immortal, free, good, problem solved, goodbye. But how do you actually experience it and realize it? Then I thought, why not take the help of a great master who was right here, Vidyaranya Swami, 600 years ago. He wrote a number of books, but he's most famous and justly so for Panchadashi, which is 15 chapters on Advaita Vedanta. And in that book, in the very beginning, he does something dramatic. In about 8 or 9 verses after the invocation, after Mangalacharana, the next few verses up to verse number 10, from verse number 3 to 10, there, using entirely experience and reason, he demonstrates that you are Brahman. Arguments. He demonstrates that you are Brahman. And I will today take a verse, borrow a verse from Vidyaranya Swami. The first one he uses when he starts the teaching, after the pranam to Guru and Ishta, when he starts the teaching, the first verse, we will base our inquiry today on that verse.
Shabdasparshadayo vedya vaichitriya jagare prithak tato vibhakta tat samvid aikarupyana vidyate.
Incisive. I mean, if I dwelt on the implications of that, just the philosophy of that, that would be the whole lecture. But today I want to dwell on the direct experience behind it. What does it mean? It goes like this. Vidyaranya Swami says, take a look at your experience. What experience? Right now, your waking experience, presuming that you're all awake, which may not be all be true in a Vedanta class. It's very soporific. And one of the ways of beating insomnia is to listen to a Vedanta lecture. I know some people use the YouTube lectures for that. Your voice is so soothing, Swami. It just take a look at our waking experience, jagare, in the waking state. Shabdasparshadayo vedya. What do we experience? We see, we hear, we smell, taste, touch. We think, we remember. We desire, we love, hate, we feel anxiety, fear. And all throughout we feel a sense of ego, I. This is our experience. A neuroscientist, Christoph Koch, who has been investigating consciousness, is the forefront of consciousness research. His latest book is The Feeling of Life Itself. So that's what he calls consciousness, the feeling of life itself. You're alive, you're feeling you're experiencing consciousness right now. Vidyaranya Swami starts there. Look at the feeling of life itself. Shabda sparsha adi vedya. All the knowables, experienceables. All of these are coming. Thousands of experiences crowd our days. He says, analytically, distinguish. Apart from these experiences, apart from all of them, there's a common golden thread, a common thread running through all of them. Most obvious thread, most obvious common factor. What is that? Consciousness, awareness. Just as if you look at the stage here, you see people on that, you see a carpet, you see a table and flowers and so on. And there is one thing which is constant here, the light shining upon all of them. You can change the configuration. The people will disappear, will go away. The objects may be changed and you might have another program here. Other people will come and the light is constant. And this light is the one which illumines all of them. All, whatever object is put in front of it on the stage is illumined by this light. Similarly, in the stage of our life, so many objects are there all the time. And all of them are illumined by one light, one consciousness. In the Kena Upanishad, it starts with, Keneshitam parati preshitam mana, Kena prana prathama prayiti yukta keneshitam vacham imam vadanti, chakshushrotram kaudeva yunakti. Which shining entity, Deva, illumines, enables what? Talking. What talking? This topic, the talking we are doing now. What enables us to see? What enables us to hear? What enables the prana to work? What enables thoughts in the mind? Notice the profound nature of that question. Thousands of years ago, a nameless student asks the teacher. One thing, he's not asking about the optic nerves, the physiology of vision. He's not asking about how the ears work. He's not asking about psychology. He's asking one, he or she, whoever it is, one thing which is behind all these experiences. Basically asking about consciousness, about awareness, that which gives us these experiences. Not that it's relevant, but I think the most recent developments in robotics and in AI, computer science and all, they replicate every activity so far attributed to human minds. And they do it, they're doing it more and more, sort of scarily better and better. Computers have memories, far more accurate, far vaster than any of us. Computers have senses. I mean, you don't just have to go to a door and in the airport, it will open before you. It's a kind of sensor. So computers have senses, computers have decision-making capacities. For the first time, I saw this Google car, this self-driving car in San Francisco on the road. So it's a very scary sight. There's a car coming on. Usually, sometimes there's a driver without touching the wheel. He's sitting there and the passengers are there. But the most interesting is to see the empty car. No driver, no passenger. Nicely going along next to you. Which means the computers there in that car are doing everything that a human driver is doing. Not only that, there is creativity now. Computers are making paintings. At NYU recently, they showed us, there was a panel, they showed us a group of drawings and said, can you tell us among all these drawings, which is the one made by a machine, a computer, which nobody could distinguish. They're writing short stories. And recently, I think one computer, one AI won a prize in some art exhibition to the fury of artists. Now, what is my point in all of this? My point here is that there is one thing and only one thing which AI, robotics, they have been unable to replicate, even begin to replicate. If you ask a computer scientist, are these machines, are these programs self-aware? They will laugh. They say, there's no such thing. We don't even know where to begin. These are not, how do you know? Because we haven't programmed them. All the other things are programmed. They can do these. These are capacities programmed into them. But self-awareness, do they have the feeling of life itself, these machines? No. Very interesting. Every feature of the human mind is now being replicated by machines. Except one. Consciousness. Thousands of years ago in the Kena Upanishad, hundreds of years ago, Vidyaranyaswami, he says, consciousness is distinct from the contents of consciousness. Consciousness is distinct from the objects presented to consciousness. In all your experiences, it is this consciousness. Not only that, when you fall asleep, in deep sleep, in dreams, dream sleep, when the external world has disappeared, we are lying on the bed and sleeping, we dream, a dream world comes up. That's entirely different from this waking world. Based on the experiences of this waking world, it's different. And yet there's one thing common which continues in the dream world. This consciousness which you have right now, this consciousness, right now which we are, this continues in the dream world also. That illumines the objects of the dream, which are generated by the mind. This is sort of like a virtual world, a virtual reality generated in the mind. But same consciousness continues. And when everything shuts down, no external world is experienced, no dreams are experienced, just blankness, the same consciousness continues to illumine that blankness. Next day, what's the story? Same story. A waking state, one consciousness illumining various contents coming and going, dream state, deep sleep state, and so, Vidyanand Swami says, and so the story of our life revolves. Day after day, very beautiful verses. Masabdi yoga parya, masabdi, he says, gata gammyeshu anekadha. Years, months and years roll by. Lifetimes roll by. Ages roll by. Consciousness is one and shining. Navdeti nastameti. Samvid eka swayam prabha. This one consciousness which is self-luminous. It shines. Shines, we are not using, he's using the material analogy of light, but it means it's awareness. This consciousness is constant. Not only that, this consciousness has been constant in our life from our childhood. I am not making claims about this. Let us just look into our own experience. What does it feel like? Body has changed from babyhood to childhood to teenage to middle age to old age. Body has changed so much. Mind has changed even more. Imagine the kind of mind we had as little boys or girls. What we liked, what we thought, what we loved, hated. I was at Singapore airport late in the night, 3 a.m. And this little kid with his parents were sitting cranky late in the night. And the father tried to give him, bribe him with a chocolate. Now, his only mistake was a chocolate bar. He broke it. And it was disaster for the kid. Started screaming, yelling. Why? To his mind, everything has now been ruined because the bar is broken. You might say it's not such a tragedy. But to his mind, it's a tragedy. That's the kind of mind we all had as kids. How our minds have changed. How our bodies have changed. Has the consciousness changed? Apart from body and mind. Apart from mind. Isn't it the same consciousness which is experiencing that little kid's mind and today the mature mind, hopefully, today's? Yeah. Isn't it the same consciousness? It is the same consciousness. There's a little logical argument here. So no, why can't we say consciousness has changed? Well, all changes are in the body, are in the mind. Consciousness apart from body and mind does not change. Mr. Swami, are you just stipulating? Should we believe you that it doesn't change? Suppose it changes. Well, suppose it changes. How will you know it? If you know some change, that knowing is what? Consciousness illumining an object. If a change is known, it must be something in the object. If it is a change in consciousness, in the subject itself, it can never be the object of knowledge. Vedya. If it can never be known, a change in consciousness, suppose there's a change in consciousness, consciousness changes somehow. If it's at all possible, we'll never know it. If we can never know of it, why even speak about it? Consciousness does not change. You are that. Remember, we are talking all the time talking about you. That's one beautiful thing about Vedanta. It's about the most important, nicest subject in the world. I, me, myself. My favorite subject in the world. So we are talking about you. You are that same consciousness which you were in babyhood, childhood, teenage, middle age, now whatever your age is, and it will be continue to be the same. I heard a beautiful story. We have this young man in our ashram, Patrick. He is a great admirer of Anandamayima. Have you heard of Anandamayima, who was there in the north of India for she has a picture of Anandamayima right there. So very beautiful story. Paramahamsa Yogananda, who established the Self-Realization Fellowship here, he went back to India for a short while at a visit. In one of the visits, he met Anandamayima. And the story is very, very cute, you know. He gets down from the car to in Anandamayima's ashram, and she would always behave like a little girl. So she ran up to him saying, "Father, where were you all these years? I've been waiting for you." So he was taken aback a little bit. He had never met her earlier. Then he said, "Please tell me something about yourself." And she said, "This, what is there to tell? I was always like this. I was always like this. And then